The show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth, whether you want to hear it or not. It's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Here's your host, Joe Vecchio.
Okay, here we are. It's yet another episode of the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I hope everybody's doing well out there. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, let me remind you of the number to call in when you want to call in. It's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. And once again, let me thank the lovely and talented Agnes for being the producer and running the show out in West Virginia. And, of course, Bob Kincaid and Ben Birch, who are the founders of White Rose Society and the Head On Radio Network. Again, I hope everybody's doing okay. Actually, I was almost going to cancel tonight's show because I'm feeling real, real depressed because of just personal situations. You know, it happens to everybody. You know, bad things happen, and sometimes you let it get to you more than you should. But just a lot of things going on, and very little of it good. And but I thought, you know, I've been slacking off on the damn Cup of Joe reports. I better not start slacking off on the radio show because, you know, future-wise, this is about the best thing I got going for me right now until I make this move to Chicago. If I make the move to Chicago, because as it's now, I can't. If I had to leave, I simply couldn't leave because, I got no money. I'm flat broke. I'm out. I'm emptied. I keep asking for donations, and I realize that people have their own issues and their own problems to deal with, and that's fine. I understand that. But, man, lately it's just been like, you know, getting blood from a stone. Except for my regular subscribers, which is like, you know, maybe $50 a month at best, I really don't get any income coming in. And nobody has any, you know, even temporary work for me down here. I do some desktop publishing stuff, and I've got feelers out, but, you know, there's nothing going on. It's one of the reasons why I'm trying to get the hell out of Atlanta. And, you know, money, I hate money. I hate what money does to you when you're poor. I hate what money does to you when you're rich. You know what I mean? I wish we lived in the kind of society where the role of money was greatly reduced. And I just don't know how to build that kind of society just yet. But I really do wish we had that so that people wouldn't be stressed out. You know, Martin Luther King said that the real enemy is poverty. That, you know, black or white, whatever color you are, the real enemy is poverty. So, you know, it's really, really, really different. But, you know, when you get in situations where you feel powerless to do stuff, and it's not just the money thing, it's just politically and all that, you get depressed. And depression is like a big weight that's on your shoulder. Anybody who's been depressed understands exactly what I'm talking about. You know, you get to where you feel like you don't even want to get out of bed. You don't want to do anything. You just want to go to sleep and hope it goes away when you wake up. And I've been dealing with that for a long time. And it's been even more so since Kathy passed away. It's been very difficult for me because even though we were poor, when we were together, we were still happy. There was still the stress of not having a lot of money. And, you know, and that's the thing about it. Here's the truth. There was a time, and it was the time before Kathy came to be with me, there was a time when I was doing pretty well financially. I mean, I wasn't great. I wasn't rich. But, you know, I was supporting myself. I had a good job. I was living in a nice place, and I was even paying off a new car. And everybody, you know, almost everybody has moments in life that they regret, things they wish they had done differently. I mean, I could have decided not to pursue Kathy and have her come with me, you know, be with me, because that's basically what happened, that I pursued her and I wanted her to come and be with me. You know, but because I loved her and I wanted her with me and I was willing to accept her kids into my life as well, that bankrupted me. And had I not been bankrupted by doing that, Had I not done that, I'd probably be in much better financial shape than I am now. You know, I've spent 2 out of the last 3 years unemployed, mostly because Kathy needed me to be there with her when she was sick, and she was always sick from day one. There was always something wrong with her. And even more especially, the last 3 months of her life, which she spent in a hospital bed, and I was there with her nearly every day. And actually, I was with her every day in a sense that even if I wasn't there physically, I was on the phone with her. In fact, sometimes what I used to do would be to call up her hospital room and just, you know, talk to her. And then I went, you know, when she went to sleep, I told her, don't hang up. And I would just listen to her breathe. I'd have it on the speakerphone and I'd just listen to her so that I'd know she's okay. And then when she woke up, we would talk again because she was so drugged up, she went kind of in and out. And it was a real strain for me just to go in there to visit her to begin with because she was because I hate hospitals. I absolutely despise hospitals. And, you know, when, to this day, whenever I go past Grady Hospital, which is where she passed away, I blow a little kiss in her direction because that's where she passed away. But, you know, it's not like I was intentionally just slacking off the last couple of years. There were things that I had to deal with. And anybody who's had to deal with a seriously ill person understands, again, exactly what I'm talking about. Now, you know, when Kathy passed away, there were people who donated money to me in condolence, and that was very nice and very wonderful. And, you know, the apart from the money that I needed to use to travel down to Orlando to go to her funeral, I did decide that I needed a kind of lifestyle change. And so I bought myself some, I got rid of some older furniture and got myself some newer furniture. Not really fancy stuff. I mean, we're talking about, you know, that kind of O'Sullivan or other brand that you just assemble yourself. And I got a new mattress because the mattress we had was something like 4 years old to begin with, and it was ratty as hell. You know, just things to hopefully just, you know, refurnish my life, so to speak. And I thought that would be sufficient. But, you know, after a while, as the weeks went on, I just realized that I need a lot more than a cosmetic change in my life. And I need to start from scratch, and that's why I decided to make the move to Chicago. And that move is in jeopardy now because, quite frankly, I don't have enough money to even get a plane ticket out there. So, I'm kind of stuck in this kind of limbo deal. I mean, I'm still got everything kind of half packed for moving and storage and whatnot. But I still don't really know for sure what the heck's going to happen. And I'm pretty certain that once I get to Chicago, things will be okay. It's just a question of getting there. And I'd very much like to get up there with more than just, you know, a suitcase. Because that's how I came to Atlanta. I came here with $20 and a suitcase. And it takes you a long time to break out of that hole. I'd rather not go in there in the hole. Phyllis Euster, my friend who's occasionally been on the show and who consistently ditches me. Now, she's probably listening in. She went to the Gay Pride event earlier in Atlanta. She said she would call in. I hope she does call in. But she keeps telling me that I'm a millionaire in the waiting, though I don't have any idea why she thinks that. Frankly, I'd just be happy to pay off my debts, the debts that I've worked up in the last few years, and to find the job that I'm happy with and that allows me to pay the rent and bills and have enough left over for, you know, the occasional night out and some fun and stuff like that. You know, we're still working on things here at Head On Radio. This is what I'd like to make my career. I think I'm pretty good at it. I hope you agree, because otherwise you wouldn't be listening in. But, you know, if that doesn't happen, I at least would like to have a situation where I'm just happy with what I do. And to me, that's the definition of success. When you're doing something that you enjoy and getting paid for it. I mean, it doesn't matter what that is. Just doing something that you enjoy, that makes, you know, that it's not even work when it's like that. You're like on constantly on vacation. You know, and I wish the same for everybody. I mean, it's not about, you know, despite what some people try to tell you, it's not about how many toys you have or how much money you have. Because money, once you get past a certain point, money is meaningless. I've used this quote before. George Lucas talked about that. He said, once you have a nice house and a nice car, more money just means you eat out more. And it really doesn't mean anything. And for some people, it's just the point where they have to have money because they feel like it's the only measurement of success. You know? And while I've always been lousy at getting it, I have at least understand that there are things that money is there for. I don't know if that makes any sense. Let me give you an example. When my wife and I talked about different things, she always talked about how she wanted to go up to New York City. And because she and her mother were scheduled to go up there. She was born in New York City, but they moved when she was really, really young. They moved over to a suburban area over in New Jersey because of their family. They didn't want to raise their kids in the city. Good or bad decision, I have no idea. At any rate, her mother and Kathy's mother and her were planning on a trip up to New York City to go to Radio City Music Hall. But a couple of weeks beforehand, her mother was killed by a drunk driver in an accident. So she never got to go up there. And one year, we got, because of Kathy had the kids, for the last time, she got a real big income tax return because she had the earned income tax credit. And, you know, she was making practically no income anyway. But, she had enough. But the thing is, she got a couple of $1,000. And I said, we're using this money. We're going up to New York. And we really couldn't have afforded it. That money could have gone to more important things, so to speak. But my attitude was at the time, I said, look, money is money. Money comes and money goes. Okay? You need this trip. It's important for you. We're going to take it. And so we did. And we even though we didn't go inside, we actually got to Radio City Music Hall, which was the fulfillment of a dream for her. And it made her very happy. And quite frankly, I don't care if I wind up, you know, being homeless in the street. The truth of the matter is that those few smiles, not the few smiles, but the many smiles that she had for me, that showed how happy she was, that made it all worthwhile. Now, I could have not had her come over. And I could have done better for myself financially, but it wouldn't have meant anything. It doesn't mean a thing if you can't really share it with somebody. And my life is not as good without her. I mean, I've got good friends, and I've got things like that, but you know what? Friends have other things to do, and they can't always come over and, you know, be with me and all that. Because I like having company, but I'm not very good company lately, I'll admit that. Because I can be very negative about things. But at least with Kathy, she was always there. And when I felt bad, she could pick me up. And when she felt bad, I could pick her up. I mean, that's what being in a relationship is all about. It's not just sex, and it's not just marrying for status, as some people do. But, you know, coulda, shoulda, woulda. You know, I was in precision measurement electronics in the Air Force. PMEL, it's called. Precision measurement electronics. Calibration of electronic equipment. It's a decent paying job. In fact, the Air Force doesn't do that itself anymore. They have that all done by contractors. I could be making $20, $25 an hour doing that. But you know what? It's a boring, pointless job. Not pointless, but it's just a boring, crappy job. And I hated it. So I got out of it. And I could have stayed in that, but you know what? I'd rather be poor and happier than have that kind of money and be miserable. Because that's what I was when I was working. I was just absolutely miserable. Of course, I wasn't with Kathy then. Maybe if I was with Kathy, things would have been different. That I could have handled the stress of being overseas and stuff early. Oh, I like being overseas to a certain extent. But, you know, the work was just driving me crazy. But anyway, shoulda, woulda, coulda. Everybody has regrets like that in their life. And they have things that they wish they could have done otherwise. To me, I just do the best I can with the tools I'm given, you know. Phyllis always says that I don't know how to play the game, and that's probably true, maybe because I think the game is stupid. the deception, you know, all the other things that go on that people have to do to get attention to themselves. Anyway, what have we got? We got about a quarter after the hour here. Are we getting ready to take a break? Yeah, I guess we're ready to take a break. We'll be back with more on the Cup of Joe radio show here on the Head On Radio Network.
Dog attacks and dog bites come in all sizes. Think your dog doesn't bite? Don't be so sure. Dog attacks are one of the nation's most commonly reported public health problems. Francia Smith, consumer advocate for the U.S. Postal Service.
Any dog can bite for the first time, even with the owner there. So whether you are a dog owner or not, please take the time to learn about dog safety.
Visit USPS.com and search the words dog bite. This message is brought to you by this station and the U.S. Postal Service.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricane, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
We often hear claims Muslims don't condemn terrorism.
And that Islam condones violence.
As Muslims, we want to state clearly
that those who commit acts of terror in the name of Islam are betraying the teachings of the Quran and the Prophet Muhammad.
We reject anyone of any faith who commits such brutal acts.
And will not allow our faith to be hijacked by criminals.
Islam is not about hatred and violence. It's about peace and justice.
I'm a new mother. My baby and I are healthy and happy. But I was shocked to learn that every minute a woman somewhere in the world dies in pregnancy or childbirth. When women can't plan when to get pregnant, or even how many children to have, it puts them and their babies at risk. We can lower these risks for just pennies a day. I'm proud that our government supports programs that help mothers and their families around the world. If you are too, call your U.S. Senators and Representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support U.S. assistance for voluntary family planning programs worldwide. That's 202-224-3121. For the cost of the pennies we see lying on our sidewalks, we can make a real difference. This message brought to you by Population Action International.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today won't be around for our children and grandchildren. The Earth's resources are limited. Voluntary family planning improves health while helping slow population growth, and that's good for our planet. Help build a healthy future for us all. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Okay, we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. Once again, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Give me a call, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. And if you're up to it, call and join everybody in the Head On Radio chat room. That's headonradionetwork.com, and click on the little thing that says live chat up there on the screen. We hope everybody's doing. There's been a lot of talk. Hold on. Now, I got these headphones that I use. I have to put them on in the break to hear the commercials to know when I come back and when I have a phone call. But you know what? When I'm not doing that, I like to have the headphones off because it's more comfortable that way. Ugh. So I'm telling you all the little radio secrets that no other radio show host talks about. Hang on, let me get a drink of water here. Just water. I don't drink. There's been a lot of talk, more so in particular in the blogosphere, concerning the defining terms. And it kind of goes back to Professor George Lakoff out at Berkeley, California, talking about the importance of framing message, framing the issue. And then part of that is framing the definitions. Now, you know, the Republicans have a very powerful propaganda machine, which is why they're able to get away with a lot of the things that they do. I mean, what happens is it's a coordinated effort that starts out from anywhere within that organization and moves up and eventually encapsulates the whole of what they refer to as the mainstream media, I like to call the so-called professional media. And what they like to do is they like to define the terms of the battle. And it's gotten so that we have a situation where anything any Democratic candidate says is immediately taken to be phony political posturing. And anything a Republican says is taken at face value, no matter how ridiculous it is, whether we're talking about not just WMDs in Iraq, but the many different reasons and excuses that they've given for the war since then. And those people who have been paying attention understand that it's all BS. I mean, they've been lying to us from the beginning. And it got me to thinking, and it got other people to thinking about, what is conservatism? And how do we define it to what it properly is? Because that's the real point of it, defining it to what it properly is. And what you look back on it through history and what it actually accomplishes. And also defining liberalism and trying to control the message, take back control of the message. And I had written a post, I had talked about libertarianism, but you know what, I'm not going to talk about libertarianism anymore. And the reason for that is not that I agree or disagree with any of its tenets, but the fact that there has never been a libertarian government. And since there's never been a libertarian government, we have no idea of how it actually would wind up working. I suspect that eventually what would happen is that a few people would wind up taking over the system, because that sort of free-for-all that doesn't have any practical way of preventing it, just assuming that everybody's going to act on a moral level, is just a blueprint for disaster. I could be wrong, but until we get a true libertarian government, the definition of which changes from person to person and from day to day, it seems, until we get something like that, then we can talk about it. But until then, I'm not going to talk about it. But I can talk about what conservatism is. And there was an article by Philip Ager, who wrote something in 2004 called "What Is Conservatism, and What's Wrong with It." I got to remember not to say conservativism, because there's no such word as conservativism. It's conservatism. And he wrote a very long, and while it was a good article, I thought it was typically long and drawn out, and I wanted to try to kind of summarize and not just talk about what conservatives say conservatism is. Because that's the problem with the way things are being defined right now. It's not just that we're allowing the conservatives to define liberalism, we're also allowing them to define conservatism. And if you look at it, if you look at what actually happens under conservative governments, you can see quite clearly what it is. As I define it, it can be summed up in one very simple sentence, and that is, some people are better than others. That's its primary philosophy. And it's been the predominant ideology of nearly every human society since the beginning of civilization. Even those that claim to be democratic in nature, I mean, the Athenians, the pre-Empire Romans, and current-day Americans, while they're freer than many purely conservative societies, that is, monarchies, like the ancient Egyptians or European monarchies, still had a ruling elite who strove to protect their own positions in the society. And with the exception of better technology, most people today lead lives that aren't very different from the lives of most of the people who lived in Athens and Rome, a day-to-day existence that rests on a pretty fragile foundation. Those of us who are at the bottom of the pile understand this. You know, when they talk about the trickle-down effect, that, you know, it's all, as I put it, it's just stuff rolling downhill. And anybody who's at the bottom understands exactly what it is that rolls downhill. You know what I mean? Because if you look at it, the practical, actual happening of every conservative government that's ever been on, that's ever been out there, eventually what winds up is that more money and more power gets sucked up into lesser and lesser people. That, to me, is the definition of pure conservatism. And it doesn't really matter what the ideology behind it is. Whether you're talking about Stalin or Hitler, which are as opposed politically as you can get, the end result is still the same. It's just a different group of people having the power and the money, whether you're talking about corporatists or political bureaucrats. It still works out the same way. It's authoritarianism is what it is. And that, to me, is how we should start defining it and how we should start looking at it. And I've talked about this before. I've talked about this in a report. You know, and all these people talking about, you know, true conservatives, you know, because as Digby points out, let's see, where did Digby says that? Because Digby points out that conservative is a magic word. There's no such thing as a bad conservative. Conservative is a magic word that applies to those who are in other conservatives' good graces until they aren't, at which point they are liberals. That's it. And here's the truth. There are and have been some true conservatives in this country from the beginning. They stood for the British during the Revolutionary War. They stood for the slave owners. They stood for businesses who used slave labor. They stood against pretty much anything that makes life better for anyone except the opportunistic few who see themselves as the motor of the world from whom all things emerge. Whether you're talking about capitalist entrepreneurs or inherited monarchies, that's it. And I'll give them credit for consistency because no matter how badly or how often the latest batch of conservatives screw up, they still refuse to accept the fact that conservatism, while it's an effective campaign tool, is a complete and utter failure as a governing philosophy. It was liberal policies that made this country great. Liberals freed us from the British. Liberals fought to end slavery. They demanded that a day's work equals a day's pay, and they did it all with the anchor of conservatism tied firmly around their necks. Because conservatism is like gravity. It will pull you down. You have to work to rise above it. And the distribution of wealth and power is the key to that. Liberals favor a greater distribution among the most people. Conservatives favor a few people getting more power. The more power in the fewer hands determines the level of conservatism. That's really the truth. And that's really all it stands for, if you want to look at it from that point of view. And it doesn't matter where you come from, whether you're talking about a communist dictatorship or a fascist dictatorship or a royal monarchy, it always boils down to that one constant. And I can't think of a society in that sense that's truly conservative, where people have been freer than in liberal societies. And, you know, I talk about the New Deal from time to time, and then people just say, well, you know, that saintly New Deal, and it wasn't perfect. No, it wasn't perfect. It wasn't a utopian society, and I'm not claiming that it was. It was flawed because it didn't distribute enough of the wealth to enough people and enough of the power. Black people were still under oppression because the Jim Crow laws existed throughout the 40s and the 50s. even though blacks fought hard in the war, you know, just as hard as the whites did, they were still segregated in the military until Truman desegregated them. And even after the civil rights movement in the 60s, they're still, to this day, doing things to prevent black people from being part of the society. If you look at the anti-voter efforts of the Republicans, what they're basically trying to do is to prevent black people from voting, mostly because they know black people are going to vote for Democrats. And the reason being because even though black people can be a bit disgruntled with the Democratic leadership, as well they should, the truth of the matter is they know how Republicans are going to treat them. Okay, Agnes is cueing me. It's bottom of the hour. We'll be back after a few with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show on the Head On Radio Network.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
When Bruce and I filled in for Bob Kincaid, we didn't know what to expect, but we sure didn't expect a call from the decider.
I told Walmart to sell the Easter egg die kits, you know, the ones with the resurrection egg. We decided at Camp David that we were going to support Walmart and go with what the Lord told them and buy some of them resurrection egg kits. And, you know, I found the resurrection egg. God spoke to me through that egg. God told me that I am the fourth member of the Holy Trinity. We're calling it the Holy Quadraphonic. So now I'm the fourth voice of the Holy Trinity. So now I've got four voices in my head. I have the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost and the decider. I'm the decider. I get to decide.
Don't miss Head On with Bob Kincaid, weekdays 7 to 10 p.m. and Fourth Estate Radio with John Fox and Bruce Birch, Saturdays 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network.
What's the time I'll always remember? Could never forget how reality came down around us like some Western movie set. When the dust all settled, the sun shone so bright, and a great calm took over us like it was all gonna be alright. That's how it felt to be alive after the
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Do something different. And for the first time, their children were proud of their parents. Somewhere in Gaza, a little boy
we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. Once again, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Again, the number to call in is 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. And speaking of phones, let's get right to the phones. We got Jim on line one. Jim, hi, come on in.
Hey, Joe. How's it going?
Hi, how are you?
All right. Well, listen, a couple things. I heard your opening line. The only thing I can say about your loss is that I think it was from Wordsworth who says, I hold it through whatever befall. I feel it when I sorrow most. It's better to have loved and lost than never loved at all.
Well, thank you.
You know? And, I meant to tell you this. I heard your Memorial Day promo. And that's one of the better promos I've heard on this network, particularly with the background of Ode to the Common Man by Aaron Copland.
Yeah, I love that bit.
That was a good, good promo. I remember I attended Ron Brown's funeral at the National Cathedral when he died in that plane crash back in 94, 95. I think it was in April, yeah. And they used that. And it was it's a very moving and effective piece of music. So it was used very well with your promo.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Actually, after I'd done it, I didn't think I did as good a job as I thought, but everybody's been wild about it.
I've heard a lot of good things about it, really. I have. But, moving on with some other things, as far as conservative or liberal, that's kind of a hard thing to define this day and time, because the people who are in power today certainly are not, in my opinion, real conservatives, not the way they throw money away and thrown lives away and things like that. That's not too conservative. But
okay, because here's my question, Jim. Here's my question to you. Can you name a conservative government in this country or any time in history where the money and power hasn't flowed into a few hands?
Well, that's basically the way it is. But, historically, you were talking about the Revolution. And, after the American Revolution, 20% of the population left? They split. They either went to Canada or back to England.
Well, that was their right.
Yeah, and they apparently didn't like the new order. And there are a couple of conservatives that you got to give some credit for. Social Security did not originate with FDR. Social Security, believe it or not, was started by all people by Bismarck in Germany, who was about the most conservative person in Europe.
I didn't mean to imply, and I want to make this clear. I didn't mean to imply that all conservatives or all situations where you have a few people having power are a bad thing. There have been good emperors and there have been bad emperors. I didn't mean to imply that.
Or whatever, but I mean Bismarck has since then realized that unless they did something for the common man, that it would be the best tool against revolution and stuff like that.
Right. I mean, look, Napoleon started public education.
Exactly.
So I'm not, I don't want to imply, and I apologize if that impression came along, but I don't want to imply that all kings are evil and stuff like that, because it's simply not true.
That's right. And, in certain ways, I'm pretty conservative myself. I mean, a lot of liberals don't like the church, don't like the military, and I have a great affection for both, I don't like what's happened in some of those institutions, but they're great institutions, and wherever there's greatness, unfortunately there's also the possibility of great error, and that's just the way I accept that and deal with it.
Well, there are some people on the left who absolutely hate the military and anything to have to do with it. I am certainly not one of them. Obviously, we talked about this before. I'm an Air Force veteran. I come from an entire family of veterans. Liberals believe in balance, and some people are much more to the left than others, obviously.
Yeah.
But liberals believe in an understanding of balance and the necessity for a good military on several levels. But the thing is, we always try to do the best for our soldiers. I mean, you look at the Republicans, the people in charge now. You got Karl Rove making a speech talking about how Democrats, aren't there. They're there for the first fight, but they're not there for the last bullets. And he has absolutely no military experience. In fact, he himself, got a deferral to go to war. I don't think anybody in the current administration actually has ever gone to war. I mean, don't give me Bush's Air Guard stuff. You know, that wasn't really, you know, that was just a cushy position his daddy got him into.
Right.
You know?
Sure was.
So.
And unfortunately, these people are now the ones in command of our soldiers. I mean, we got guys over there, for example, these contract security people that are making just fabulous bokus of money.
And causing a lot of trouble, too.
And causing, I guess so. And then you've got the same soldiers who are soldiers and men in uniform who are doing the same job. And they're making the most $30,000 a year. And I hear some of these security people, these private contractors, are making like over $100,000 or in six figures.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that really kind of pisses me off. It really does.
And, you know, here's the other deal about that, too. All those people making six-figure salaries, they don't pay taxes. If you work, if you're an American and you work overseas, because that's what I, when I worked for Ford Aerospace, back when they had an aerospace division, when I worked for them in Capodichino, Italy,
yeah,
I didn't pay any taxes on the year that I worked there, because you don't pay taxes when you work overseas. I don't know if you knew that or not. A lot of people don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys are making good money and not paying any taxes on it.
Well, I mean, and, you know, unfortunately, these private people over there are making so much more and doing the same job that our soldiers are doing. And I hear some of these private guys are making six times as much as what our men in uniform being paid in. And I don't think that's right either, do you?
No, of course not. I wrote a post a long time ago called Republicans Hate Soldiers. And basically, and it was a point I wanted to make about the current administration, is that they believe that they're the only people who are human beings. In other words, you know, what I said about conservatism being, you know, essentially some people better than others, they take this to the ultimate extreme.
Yep.
That's the only way you can explain how they can sleep at night knowing how many deaths are caused. If they're in their mindset, these people are just pawns, that they're not even human, then as far as they're concerned, whether they live or die is inconsequential. And I'm not just talking about the Iraqis, but I'm talking about the soldiers, too. They really don't care about them. That's why the soldiers don't have the proper equipment. That's why, you know, they can feel free to say, bring it on and all that other stuff.
That's what one guy was saying. He said that the equipment is just in a state of constant bad repair. I mean, you know, warfare in the desert is hell on machinery. And a lot of our soldiers have said that their Humvees don't work, their tanks don't work, and because they've got sand and they're not adequately supplied. You've got people like Halliburton that are just charging arms and legs for meals and laundry and stuff like that. And it's really a rich man's war and a poor man's fight, and I don't like that at all.
Unfortunately, it's been that way pretty much throughout our history, though. Don't you look at? I mean, if you look at the Civil War, I mean, both the South and the North, basically
get somebody to go for you. Is that the way it was?
Yeah, exactly. That was in the and of course in the South, what they did was they basically lied to the poor whites, saying that if they free the slaves are going to take your jobs, and that's how they scared them into fighting for them too. So it was going on both sides. You know.
Yeah, there's a lot of injustice in our country and a lot of injustice in all wars, and I don't think any war is just. I hate it.
Only in self-defense. That's the only way I see it. Only in self-defense.
I just wish that we had not, or not we, I wish they had not have gone into this Iraqi situation, because we sure as hell have a tiger by the tail now.
Well, you know, I'm not really sure what their exact reasoning is. Someone made a good point. I think it was Greg Pallast or Joe Connison, who writes out in England, a great writer out in England, writing on these issues. He said that the reason why we're in Iraq and why we're doing things the way we're doing them in Iraq is to keep Iraq's oil off the market so that the Saudi oil and the Texas oil is worth more. It's kind of like Goldfinger. Remember the movie Goldfinger? What Goldfinger was trying to do?
He wanted to blow up our gold so his gold will be worth more.
Exactly. He wanted to irradiate it so that it wouldn't be worth anything, so that his gold would. And that's, you know, that might be what's happening. I mean, I can't say for sure, but my only argument is let's get him the heck out of power first, and then we'll worry about it later.
That's the main thing, and, you know, that's the first step. And the longest journey of any journey begins longest. You know, what I'm trying to say is the longest journey begins with the first step, and I guess 2006 is going to be it, and I hope that at least we can take back the House. And I don't know about the Senate, but if we can just take back the House, then I think a lot of this stuff can be uncovered, because I'm sure there are people like John Conyers and some other people who have just reams of evidence that could lead to indictments and things like that.
And just remember that the Republicans will do pretty much anything to prevent that
from
happening.
Well, I mean, you know, they realize that their butt's in a crack, and they realize that if they do lose and they do have to come before the bar of justice, I don't think it's going to be too swift for them.
I did a thing a little while ago. I'm fairly good at desktop publishing, and one of the things I did was I did a New York Times front page, supposedly from 2032, and the headline read, "Humbled U.S. Awaits World's Verdict." It was basically imagining if the United States went through in the future what Germany went through during World War II. And, you know, part of that whole deal was that the guys who were in charge were refusing to be charged because they felt they had a higher power giving them orders. You know what I mean? That they felt that they were doing things.
You mean as far as the Nuremberg people are concerned?
Yeah. Basically, you know, I had in my little newspaper thing, I had the trial going on in Geneva, Switzerland, and the UN had been kicked out. It was 2032, and the UN's new headquarters was in Geneva because we kicked them out of the country, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I wonder if it's going to come down to that, because, quite frankly, these guys are like cornered animals now. And
yeah,
people who are capable of, yeah, and then people who are capable of declaring war and killing tens, maybe hundreds of thousands of Iraqis for no good reason, really. They're quite capable of anything, as far as I'm concerned. So let's hope we can turn this thing around soon. I'm skeptical that we will, but not because I think there's anything wrong with us, but just because we have so much going against us. We were with the gerrymandering and with Diebold electronic voting, that it's going to be very, very difficult for us to take back the House or the Senate in 2006.
Well, one can only hope, and you know,
yeah,
and that's all you can do. And there are other things that, you know, I have jousted with people about, you know, this thing with this lieutenant who didn't go in the military. I've got problems with that, you know, that a lot of people don't agree with me on, but, I mean, we can agree to disagree about that. I personally think he should have gone, but he doesn't think he should, so he didn't. And so I guess he's going to have to deal with Article 32.
It's a tough call for anybody, and I don't say anybody's right or anybody's wrong in their decision, because the people who decide to go or have their own moral reasons to do so, and the people who decide not to go have their moral reasons to do so.
Well,
so
yeah, that's right.
Tough call.
And that's what I don't agree with. I think he should have gone, but I mean, like I say, and I heard his interview on this network, but you know,
it goes both ways. I mean, you have to trust that your superiors are going to, you know, be honest and have good reasons for going to war, and not just do it for you know, spurious reasons. So it kind of goes both ways there.
You know, I believe if I'd have been that young man, I think I would have probably either gone into the Coast Guard, the Merchant Marine, the Air Force, or let's see, anything but green, you know?
Because I hear you.
If you're green, you're going to be pounding the ground.
And I hear they're transferring some people from some of the branches, I believe. I heard they're starting to do that because they're so desperate to get ground troops.
You
out
mean
there.
Stop loss is not enough, huh?
Stop loss. Well, you know, let's face it, the military's bogged down there, and you know, we're losing in Afghanistan now. You know, if you know history as well as you seem to right offhand, you understand that long occupations don't work. I mean, how do you think we became a country? It's not that Britain couldn't have kicked our asses if we were over on Europe, but the fact that we were so far away, it made it very difficult for them to try to occupy us.
Well, every pound of gunpowder, every bit of tea, every boot, every shell had to be transported all the way across the ocean.
That's right, and we have to do the same thing, even though the technology for the delivery is better. It just costs so much money, and we just can't afford to do it. Listen, Jim, I hate to cut you off,
but
we're well past time for a break.
You have a good evening.
Listen, you too, Jim. It's great for you to call in, okay?
All
you
right.
Take care.
All right, out here.
Okay, let's take a little break. We're a little past the break time, but that's okay. Let's go ahead and take a few. Let me clear my throat and hopefully give somebody else a chance to call in and talk about this issue, because this is important stuff here. This is important stuff. We'll be back with more on the Cup of Joe Radio Show on the Head On Radio Network.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
When it rains, all my friends go away.
God doesn't like me anymore.
The wind could come, take your house.
Santa won't know where to find me.
Mommy scared the sky.
What's going on in the mind of a child who's lived through a hurricane?
You can drown in your bed if you fall asleep.
A lot. Talk to them. Reassure them. We can help. Call 1-800-789-2647 to make sure they move on healthy and happy. That's 1-800-789-2647. Trained and caring people are ready to assist you 24 hours a day. It's confidential and free. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Okay, we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. Once again, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Like the song says, call me. The number is 1-800... Stop saying that. It's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366, and I'm glad Jim called in there. It's always nice having a little conversation with people, because, you know, conversation is what we're all about. We're a conversation radio. We're not confrontation radio. I don't like to yell at people. I don't like, you know, like the right-wing radio show hosts. I don't like to just get out there and make fun of people. Have you noticed that there's a German word called Schadenfreude? I think that's how it's pronounced, Schadenfreude. And basically it means taking joy in someone else's misery. And I don't know if anybody's noticed this about Republicans and right-wingers in particular, that the only time they seem to laugh or enjoy themselves is when they're putting somebody down or when somebody gets hurt. Have you ever noticed that? I remember there was a clip some time ago. It was some blooper reel thing they were advertising on television. That there was Bill Clinton and Boris Yeltsin when Boris Yeltsin was president. And I don't know what Boris Yeltsin did, but he had done something. Maybe he passed some gas. I have no idea. But you see Bill Clinton just start laughing, and it's a real, from the gut, just, oh my God, this is so funny laugh. A human laugh. And I've never seen anybody in the right wing really just do that. Whenever they laugh, it's always at somebody's expense, it seems. And I think that really, that really defines, you know, what their attitude is, and because they're just can't seem to just let go. Laughter for the sake of laughter. I try to laugh as much as I can, especially when I'm depressed, because laughter is really good at getting it. Kind of, you know, when I say depression is like a big weight that's on top of you, laughter kind of helps remove that. You know, and people tell jokes and stuff like that, or just hear funny stories. There are certain things that make me laugh a lot. For some reason, hearing a lot of people yelling at the same time, and I don't mean yelling like arguing, but just like just people talking loudly and talking at the same time, that always cracks me up. They had one of my favorite movies on last weekend, My Favorite Year, with Peter O'Toole and Joseph Bologna and Mark, what was his name? The guy who was from the show with Belky in it, the other guy. At any rate, and basically the movie is based on the true story of what happened when Errol Flynn went to be on Sid Caesar's TV show back in the 50s. And there's a wonderful scene in there where Peter O'Toole, who plays Alan Swan, who is basically Errol Flynn, you know, is first being told that what the show that he's going to do is going to be live. He started out saying, you know, I'm feeling so good tonight that I'm going to get this in one take. And Mark guy, he says to him, well, we always get it on one take, live television. And he goes, what? And he goes, yeah, sure. While you're cavorting out there on screen, 20 million people are watching it. And he's like, you know, and he starts to have a panic attack. He says, you know, and he says, well, don't worry, you know, don't panic, because, you know, we've got a wonderful audience. An audience? You know, I haven't worked in front of an audience in 20 years, you know. I played a butler. I had one line. I forgot it. And he's one of the great lines of all time. He says, I'm not an actor. I'm a movie star. And you watch Peter O'Toole do that. And O'Toole is one of the great talents in show business history. He's just wonderful movies, especially Lawrence of Arabia. And he's so good at that. I mean, you have to really have to see it to watch. It's called My Favorite Year. But we do kind of need to laugh every now and then, and it's important. It helps get you out. It doesn't take away your problems, but it helps you look at them a little bit more clearly. And when I see somebody doing that, it makes me realize that they're at least human. You know, and I think one of the things that I talk about Bush and his people is that they really do think that they're the motor of the world. They're the only people who really count. They're the only people who are humans. And it's because they think like that, and if you understand that that's how they think, then everything else falls into place. They don't care about our soldiers. They don't care about their own supporters. Everybody is just a pawn for their little games. And everything's just a power play to them. And I see this in salesmen, in a small way, the competitive nature, the almost dread fear that you might miss a sale or do something that's not going to earn you money. You know what I mean? If anybody's ever been salesman or worked around salesman, I think you understand what I'm talking about. There's almost kind of like, you know, we got to get this deal. That's why I wasn't a very good salesman at Nextel, although I was a much better salesman than they thought I was. They just needed to get me a little more customers in the store. Because I did well with people, I talked to them, and they appreciated my honesty. And that was how I dealt with it. I didn't do a hard sell, but a lot of cases, to be a good salesman or to be a salesman that stays employed, you have to play hardball. And I'm not capable of doing that. I remember a story of a friend of mine who was doing telemarketing, and they were selling perfume. And he called up one lady, and the lady said, well, you know, my husband just died. I really don't want that. I says, okay, I'm sorry, you know, and he hung up. And his boss called him in because, you know, sometimes they monitor these things for customer service and also to keep an eye on their employers. And he said, you know, you could have pushed that sale more. And my friend said, you know, if her husband just died, you know, well, she could have been lying. If she'd gone to the trouble to make up that kind of lie, she really doesn't want what we're selling, does she? You know, I mean, that's a pretty big lie to make up. So, you know, where am I? Where's my headphones? Give me those headphones. Professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I really got to get some more people to be here in the studio with me. Somebody was supposed to be in here with me, and they just kind of ditched me again. I'm always getting ditched, I'm telling you. All right, the top of the hour. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show on the Head On Radio Network.
There's a place on the web you can go where everything is so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there working hard for you every day. It's a place where you can go to raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. WBYAD40.com. So stop on by. The 101st Fighting Keyboardists of Kansas are ready to hear your opinion. There are topics of news, current events, and great humor. So let Clyde, Wally, and Dookie know that you're a working person too. WD40.com. Stop on by.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
What? You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Let's go back to the phones, and we are joined by Beauregard T. Clampett, I'm told, on line one.
Hi there, Bob.
Well, Mr. Clampett, how are you, sir?
That's fine, sir. You have had a ruckus on the airwaves this evening, Bob, and I just got to tell you where I fall down on this subject.
And fall down you do, I suppose.
Son, you catch on quick, I tell you. You're very quick, very quick. But I did want to because I kept hearing things like amnesty, and I had to tell you, Bob, if we have amnesty, we can't work them to death like we're doing. We can't pay them $3 an hour if we let them become citizens now, can we?
That whole 13th Amendment thing's still a thorn in your side, isn't it?
Oh, we won't talk about that either, Bob. Now, we're working on repealing that sucker, but it's going to take a while.
Catch Bob Kincaid weeknights, 7 to 10 p.m., right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Good man underground.
Head On.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, and I'm feeling comfortably numb. You know, I like Pink Floyd a lot, and it's only been recently, in the last maybe 5 or 6 years or so of my life, that I've really begun to appreciate. Because, you know, when I was younger, when I was growing up, all the people I knew who listened to Floyd were like druggies, you know, and they, you know, they always talk about it, it's like, well, man, you got to get stoned and listen to this, and you know, it just kind of turned me off to the music, and then I started listening to it a little while later, and it's like, oh my God, these guys are great, and especially a song like Comfortably Numb, which is so kind of off the wall, and it doesn't really follow the same kind of traditional rock and roll type of thing. I love music. I love good music, and the people who and Pink Floyd is just one of the greatest. All the music I like is pretty much old stuff, 70s, late 60s, early 70s, some 80s things, and a couple of 90s, but mostly from that period in the late 60s and pre-disco 70s. Even some disco. I remember a couple of weeks ago I had a kind of disco thing going on. I had some disco back, and I can listen to one or two disco songs, as it were. Where were we? Hey, you know, they had that, let's go back to the news here. They had this this whole thing where they had this supposedly seven terrorists out of Miami who were going to blow up the Sears building in Chicago. And you know, they hawked it like, oh my God, oh, Bush saved us again, is the media's take on it. You know, oh, Bush, the wonderful Bush saved us again. And of course, it was all BS. It was all nonsense. I mean, these guys, they weren't Al-Qaeda. In fact, the only time they even mentioned were apparently that the FBI guy was slapping him around a little bit. You Al-Qaeda? Oh, yeah, I'm Al-Qaeda. Sure, I'll say that. Just stop slapping me, okay? Watch it with that stick. And you know, they trumped it up as like it's this big darn deal, you know? And some people buy anything. You know, that the 20 or 30% or so of the people who still support this administration, they'll buy anything. You know? Washington. President George W. Bush announced today that the FBI had prevented a terrorist attack by Martians to destroy Alabama. Ann Coulter detached herself from the president's crotch just long enough to denounce the liberals who claim that no sentient life exists on Mars. That's the shape of it, man. They'll buy anything. They'll buy anything. It doesn't matter how stupid or retarded. Oh, yeah, oh, sounds good to me. Bush said it must be true. You know, and I've said time and time again, if they were the only ones who were affected by this nonsense, then I'd be happy for it. There you go. Suffer away. But, you know, they're dragging the rest of us down with them. And I've said this time and time again, you know, as far as working people are concerned, I mean, if you're a poor working person, regardless of what your color is, whether you're black or white, most, you know, it's mostly the poor white people who are voting for the Bush, or, you know, among his biggest supporters are poor white people, as far as voting is concerned. You know, these people are just voting to cut their own throats, and you wonder, it's like chickens voting for Colonel Sanders. You know? I mean, I don't understand why they think things are better in any way, shape, or form under the Republican Congress and under the Bush administration. And the Republicans have controlled Congress for the last 12 years. The Bush administration has been in charge since 2000. You know, 2001. Okay, be fair. November 2000 was the election. It took over in 2001, but he's been in charge for those 5 years. Are you paying any less taxes than you were before? How much are you paying for gas now, suckers? It's almost $3 a gallon here in Georgia, and Georgia's low compared to other places. And you know, oil profits have risen 3 times in the last 5 years. They're making 3 times as much as now as they were in 2001. What a coincidence, as Popeye would say. What a coincidence, olives. Where's Popeye now? He'd be the... Boom, boom, boom. We need somebody to just do some little punching here. God almighty. You know, when you're a relatively sane person living in an insane world, it gets to you. You know, people wonder why I get depressed sometimes. And what really bugs me is that I point out the election thing to people and saying that, you know, that there's a big reason that we're not going to win back the House and the Senate in 2006. And I'm very, very doubtful that we're going to do that. In fact, I pretty much guarantee that the Republicans are going to maintain their hold on the House and the Senate in 2006. and it has nothing to do with us. I don't know how many times I have to explain this. I don't know how many times I have to go through it. People hear what they want to hear in this stuff. Hang on a second. If I'm yelling, I need water. It doesn't matter how many times I try to explain it and clarify it. People always get the impression that I'm just being negative. I'm trying to point out what's wrong so that it can be fixed. The reason that the Republicans are going to hang on to the Congress and to the Senate in 2006 are because of several factors. The main ones being gerrymandering and Diebold voting machines. Electronic voting. Because that allows a ton of election fraud. A ton of it. And you know, people talk about, well, you know, we've been very close to all these elections. Yeah, of course we've been close. But you know what? 49% of the vote is 0% of the power. And we have a lot of people who don't seem to understand that. There's no second place in politics. This is not being defeatist. This is not being negative. This is saying this is a serious problem. We need to get it fixed. The Diebold machines, more than the gerrymandering, but the gerrymandering is like a very close number two. What was it someone once said, I forget where it comes from, but they were talking about a politician. They said, if you think he's crazy, you should meet his constituents. Why do you think these Republicans can get away with saying the outrageous things that they do? Because they live in districts where they have lunatics for constituents. And they carve these things out. And they can almost go house to house now. That's how good they are. And I'm not going to deny that the Democrats have been guilty of this as well. I mean, I'm one of those people who really believes that we ought to have some sort of nonpartisan way of getting these districts set up. I also think we ought to get rid of open primaries. Here in Georgia, we have an open primary. For those of you who don't live in states where that occurs, what it means is that whether you're a Republican or Democrat, you can vote in either primary. If you're a Republican, you can cross over and vote in the Democratic primary. It means you can't vote in the Republican primary. You know, it's a one or the other type of deal. But what it does mean is that it sometimes allows your opponents to pick who's going to run in the election. And that happened with us here in Georgia with Cynthia McKinney, who was my congresswoman. I live in her district. And basically what happened was Denise Majet ran on the Democratic side, and the Republicans crossed over to vote for her so that Denise Majet, instead of Cynthia McKinney, was the one who was on the ticket. And Majet, of course, won her seat, and then, like an idiot, decided she was going to go out and run for the Senate after 2 years. That seat was hers, man. She could have held that onto that for a long time. And, of course, she lost the Senate race. Because, you know, as much as there are nice things about Georgia and Atlanta in particular, the truth of the matter is, once you get out in them rural areas, there isn't hardly anybody who's going to vote for a black woman for anything. But what's Denise Majet doing now? She's running for school superintendent. And it's like this race I'm talking about. I mean, how Democrats need to be more disciplined. I'm working for Representative Carla Drenner, who is a very nice person who I've met and who I've worked with. Very smart, very tough. I wouldn't want to get on our bad side. She's got 2 degrees, and she is extremely knowledgeable in environmental issues. And she has a lot of bipartisan support, even within the Georgia Assembly, which is their term for the Congress. Okay? She's been the representative of the 86th District for 3 terms, 6 years now, and she's done a fantastic job for her district. It doesn't matter what color you're in. She lives in a majority black district, but she treats everybody the same. And she's done a wonderful job. Okay? But yeah, here we have Cynthia Tucker, who I happen to know and who I happen to like on a personal level, deciding she's going to run in the primary against Carla Drenner. And I'm looking to myself, why? I was talked about this last week. There's no point to it. The leaders of the DeKalb County Democratic Party, or whoever else is in charge, ought to get with Ms. Tucker, take her aside, and say, sit this out. Carla Drenner is a good representative. She's done very well for her district. And she doesn't need to be involved in this kind of fight. The time is going to come when she's going to either want to run for higher office or retire. And when that time comes, then you can have the seat. Because I'm pretty sure Cynthia Tucker can do an okay job once she gets in. Maybe not as good as Ms. Drenner, but that's okay. She has no reason for running now, and as upset as I am with her for running, I'm more upset with the local Democratic leadership for not going out and just saying, knock it off. Hell, there's not even a Republican opponent in the general. My throat's going. Give me some music, Agnes. Let's get out of here for a few minutes. Quarter after the hour. It's 45 minutes late. We'll be back with more on the Cup of Joe Radio Show on the Head On Radio Network.
Another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2-new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Please listen to me, Marvin Hamlisch. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
In Kosovo, the U.S. government has provided over 292 million ounces, a $70 million U.S. government assistance package for Central America in response to Hurricane Mitch.
Sometimes it seems like we spend an awful lot of our tax money helping people in other countries. But in reality, it's less than 1% of our government's annual budget. Our aid programs save lives by helping couples plan their families, immunizing children against deadly diseases, and ensuring that people have safe drinking water. It's important that these programs continue. Helping create a healthy and secure future for people in developing countries helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. Senators and Representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121. This message brought to you by Population Action International.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
We'll be right back.
Okay, and we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the number to call in is 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. And a reminder to everybody, friends don't let friends be Republicans. That's a message brought to you by the Council for... What are you thinking? I want to get back to my little rant about conservatism, because I wanted to make it clear that I wasn't trying to have a psychoanalysis of conservatives. I was just trying to define terms. Because the reality is people are much more complex than that. Everybody has beliefs that can be defined as conservative, liberal, or libertarian, or even communist and fascist at different levels, at different times in their lives, and sometimes simultaneously. We're complex creatures. And everybody's beliefs are based upon a combination of a lot of different things, including and especially the environment that they grew up in. That's why urban areas with a denser population tend to have a different, more liberal mindset than rural areas who tend to have a more conservative mindset. It's when we let these ideologies lead us that we get into trouble. I mean, I can't speak for everybody else, but when I'm confronted with a problem, I don't ask myself, what's the liberal solution? And likewise, when I'm engaged in a debate with somebody, I don't ask myself, what's the liberal position? What makes me a liberal is my desire to do something and my willingness to try something that hasn't been tried before. And if it fails, to recognize it and learn from it. Liberalism is a reality-based political system. It can be idealistic. It's not always right. It's not always perfect. But it recognizes that if you make a mistake, you should move on. And if I see that doing something just for the sake of doing something can cause more harm than good, or that there's nothing wrong with the way things have been done before, then that's how I would approach it. And how I reach these decisions is based upon my own background and experiences. Now, maybe that doesn't make me more of a liberal, but it makes me more of a human, and that's more important. People who allow their ideology to define them are denying an important part of their humanity. They rely instead on cookie-cutter solutions and responses that have usually been fed to them by other people. And yeah, this phenomenon exists in some liberals, but it's conservatives who've turned it into an art form. Oh man, I'm losing my voice. Hang on a second. Hang on. Let me write something here. Hey, I want to invite everybody real quick to join us in the Head On Radio Network chat room. Go on headonradionetwork.com and click on the live chat link. And, you know, there are several different chat rooms. I'm not going to get into them, which ones, but there's a bunch of them that that I talk to. But this is important. It's important for me to mention this and to recognize the fact that that this sort of thing is much more complex than just liberalism or conservatism. It's people, and it's how people react. You know? It's people. What else is going on here? What's going on in the other things? Let's see. Oh, my goodness. I had a little belch there. Don't you hate it when you belch and you get a little acid reflux in your throat? Don't you hate that? It's awful. It just tastes horrible and it leaves a lousy stink feel burning in your throat. The stuff continues in Iraq. Still more bombing, even though some people live in denial that it's going on. Oh, we're winning the war there. I overheard some right-wing guy talk about how the more we're winning, the shriller we on the left get. He's just like, you know, can you be any more clueless? Hello, McFly! Thompson and McFly! God almighty. Some people just you know, you need to get a little reality check for them. They just don't understand, man. They just don't see. All they see is, oh, we're in control now. They'd rather the country burn in this as a burn into a cinder, as long as a Republican was in charge of it, right? Who's out there listening? Is somebody out there listening? Give me a phone call, somebody. Come out and talk to me. Got to be somebody out there who wants to talk. 1-877-443-2366. Okay, and in about 5 minutes, we're going to take another break. But please call in, you know. Talk to me. Let's have a conversation here. What do I got going on? God almighty. The Whiskey Bar, one of my favorite blogs, he had a little post up called The Kabul Follies. And they had a quote from a Major General Benjamin Freakley, who's the commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan. He said, I think the Taliban realize they have a window to act. The enemy is working against the window that he knows is closing. And, of course, what a lot of people don't know, because you're not seeing it much in the news, is that the Taliban is making a big comeback out in Afghanistan. Mainly because we have our troops, the bulk of our troops, tied up in Iraq. And the Afghanis are fighting, or excuse me, the Taliban, well, yeah, they're Afghanis, they're fighting back. And what I like is that Bill Mann, who runs the Whiskey Bar, compared that to a quote by General William Westmoreland, who was the guy who was in charge of the forces in Vietnam, who said in 67 that we have reached an important point. When the end begins to come into view, the enemy's hopes are bankrupt. And the right wing is living in a fantasy world where everything is going smoothly in Iraq. Oh, you know, we put up a new school. Ah, the people are free. And of course, you know, there's all the different stories that come out, whether they read them or not. You know, it doesn't faze them. It's like it doesn't even exist. You know, and you wonder how these people sleep at night. And I can't imagine it. I just can't imagine it. And I try to understand the mindset. And after a while, I just stop and I say to myself, you know what? Never mind the mindset. Just get them out of power. You know, some people are just going to be that way, and there's not much you can do about it. But make sure they don't have any control over your life. You know, that's the big thing. Hang on, I'm typing. I'm multitasking, ladies and gentlemen. Multitasking is a wonderful thing that I can kind of sort of do. Which is why you hear a lot of silence. I had a couple of John Wayne movies earlier on today, and I try to avoid John Wayne movies, not because I think he makes bad movies, but because I can't stand the idea that this is a guy who promoted war and promoted the glorification of war. Even though people tell me, well, you know, it's not always glorious in the wars that he produces. He shows the bad sides, too. But he still shows it as being glamorous in a certain respect. And I remember an old story from a friend of my father's, a guy who was fought on Iwo Jima, about apparently where Wayne went to visit some of the troops and he got booed off the stage. I don't know if it's true or not. I hope it is true. Because Wayne and Reagan and people like him, who never fought themselves, seem to enjoy putting other people's sons and daughters in danger, or their other people in danger. And like I mentioned earlier to Jim, you look at these guys who are in charge now, how much military experience do they have? Practically none of them. I don't think any of them have. I think Rumsfeld has a little bit. I think he was a pilot of some sort. And don't give me Bush's era National Guard stuff. That's just nonsense. What do we got? We got the bottom of the hour here. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that's when we're going to do our Buzz Flash GOP Hypocrite of the Week. So give me a call. 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-4 head on as we head into the last half hour. It's your last chance to get at me, man. It's your last chance to get at me. Don't miss this opportunity. We'll be back with more on the Cup of Joe Radio Show on the Head On Radio Network.
Back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. How do you choose between a GOP consultant accused of pedophilia and responsible for a notorious anti-Al Gore ad, and a GOP family values Republican whose claim to fame appears to be that he was an adulterer? Since the consultant hasn't yet been convicted of sexual misconduct with a prepubescent girl, we'll go with Tom Gallagher, who is seeking the Republican nomination to replace Jeb Bush as governor of Florida. The Miami Herald aptly headlined a story on Gallagher, quote, "Gallagher's family values take hit with revelations." Tom Gallagher's admission that a 1979 extramarital affair led to his divorce forced the candidate for governor to leave the script of his family-focused campaign, unquote. Yes, the philandering Republicans who espouse family values are a dime a dozen. For his part, Gallagher's ex-wife, Ann Louise, kicked him out of their Miami home in 1979 when she discovered he had been having a year-long affair with a Tallahassee legislative aide. There's more. After Ann Louise filed for divorce in 1979, an allegedly intoxicated Gallagher returned to their home and tore a screen off the house, the court documents say. The next day, he returned and took the dog. Ann Louise Gallagher asked the judge for a restraining order. But not to worry. Gallagher is from the George W. Bush School of Evading Responsibility. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Gallagher asks Florida voters to forgive him because, you guessed it, he's found Christ. Hey, and look what finding Christ did for Bush. It enabled him to run roughshod through the American Constitution, lie like a con man, destroy Iraq, and make us nearly bankrupt. Tom Gallagher sure knows a role model when he sees one, and for that, he merits being chosen as the BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week. Until next week, remember our motto, so many Republican hypocrites, woof, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
Okay, we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show for the last half hour. Once again, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, cracking voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Great job by BuzzFlash, once again, with their Hypocrite of the Week. The number to call in, once again, is 1-877-4 Head on. It's 1-877-443-2366. Hey, let's just go right to the phones. We got Alyssa from Germany on line one. Hi, Alyssa. How you doing? You going to any World Cup games?
Nope, just watching on TV.
Hey, how you doing?
Not too bad. I think you're absolutely right, though, that if Bush Co. had any experience in the military whatsoever, we wouldn't be in Iraq.
I think if he had any experience in real business, he wouldn't be running the country the way he is.
Yeah, true. But I think
What's the word on the street out there in Germany? I mean, you know, I used to believe that Europeans in particular used to hate, whatever they think of American government, they still liked Americans in general. What's the mood there now?
I think it's pretty much still the same. I've never encountered anyone who's blamed me for Bush. They've never said anything bad about me because of Bush. They've said plenty of bad about Bush, but that's to be expected.
What's the funniest comment you heard from a German person about Mr. Bush that you can recall?
I wouldn't call any of them funny.
What's one that stands out more than anything else that you can recall?
Just that he's an idiot. He shouldn't be there. That's pretty much the consensus.
Well, there's a lot of us who kind of feel the same way. Unfortunately, yeah. There's not a whole lot that we can do about it right now. Hopefully in 2006 we can start to turn the tide a bit. How do you enjoy Germany? Do you like living overseas?
It's not bad. It has its ups and downs.
What's your favorite part?
The social services that are available, the public transportation.
Let's talk about that real quick, the social service in particular. Now, if somebody gets sick in Germany, they just go right to the doctor, right? I mean, they don't have to worry about whether they have insurance or anything else. Is that correct?
Insurance is mandatory.
Okay, but you still just go right to the doctor?
Yes.
And is there like cover, not cover charge, that's not the right, what's the word for it? You know what I'm talking about. You have to pay something when you go there, or is it just all covered by the insurance regardless?
It depends on what you have. There are some private insurances available, but there are co-pays for some and not for others. It just depends on what one you have. As far as I'm aware, there is a small co-pay for those under the state insurance, but it's something like €2.
That's what, about $2?
Yeah, about $3.50, I think, right now.
The euro is doing much better against the dollar than it had. It kind of started out a little rocky, but it seems to have been coming back up a bit.
Oh yeah.
How long have you lived in Germany?
2 years.
Okay, so you've been there for a while. And you, what city are you in?
Bruxelles.
And obviously, you're not a German person. You're an American person who moved over there, right?
Yes.
Are you working there or?
Looking for a job. Job situation is about as bad here as it is in the U.S.
And how are you supporting yourself there?
I'm married.
Oh, okay. So your husband, what does your husband do?
He's in international sales for a company that sells computer components.
So you're gonna be there for a while longer too, aren't you?
Yes.
Well, you know, maybe you're safer over there. You know, I know people who've moved to Canada and you know, I'm moving to Chicago, hopefully, and I think that might... Well, I don't know if that's going to be any safer or not, but I think it'll be safer as far as environmental stuff is concerned. At least it's not going to get flooded over by seawater or anything like that.
Yeah.
Are there any particular stories you'd like to tell about Germany, something you'd like to share with everybody out here about, you know, things that happen in Germany? As a good comparison to how things work differently over there than it would over here?
The public transportation is much better. I can get anywhere in Germany.
Is it expensive?
Excuse me?
Is it expensive?
It can be depending on how far you're going, but there's deals constantly for going to different places. So if you plan it right, if you watch the websites, you can go somewhere for really cheap. Last year we went to Prague for our honeymoon. And if I remember correctly, it was €250 for there and back for a train ticket.
That's not too bad. That's for both of you, or is that each?
That was for both of us.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And it's nice riding the trains, isn't it? I mean, we don't ride trains as much as we used to here in the States, but there's a very, very nice feel for just riding in a car, and it's got that nice little clackety-clack sound, or even if it doesn't have that, you just kind of have that nice, smooth feeling, and you get to watch the stuff pass by as you go. It's not like flying, you know?
Yeah, well, it was nice and relaxing because I don't have my driver's license yet here. And so my husband would have had to drive the entire way, and if I remember correctly, it's supposed to be about a 12-hour drive from where we're at to Prague. Or is it longer? I can't remember exactly. But
well, they at least have really good highways in Germany, though.
Oh yeah, Autobahn.
Is there still no speed limit there, or have they changed that?
There is a recommended speed limit, although there is a hard speed limit in many places. But in a lot of places, it's still wide open. You can go as fast as you want, as long as you're driving a regular car and not a semi-truck or taking a trailer with you.
Okay, I can't imagine a semi going 150 down a highway. That would scare the hell out of me.
Well, I'm so terrible with conversions. I can't do them off the top of my head, but I think the fastest we've gone was 230 kilometers an hour.
I think that's something like 120, 130 miles an hour.
If I
remember right, I think it's 100 clicks per hour is 60 miles an hour. I think that's right. So you're looking at about 130 miles.
Yeah.
You know, it was funny because I lived in Italy for a while, but I also lived in Japan, and they don't have very many big highways in Japan. They had when we went down to Osaka from Misawa, we drove on the Tohoku Expressway, which was a toll road. It was a very expensive toll road. I think it wound up being something like $85 to drive the entire route of it, and. We've discovered that Japanese cars, because, you know, when you're driving in the streets, you don't get it up very fast. But when you got over 100 clicks in the Japanese car, a little bell would start to ring, which is like a warning to slow down. So, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong. And my friend's wife was in, you know, there was a bunch of us driving. She was like, oh, that's Ding Chan, who was the name of a little, she said, there's a little mouse in there who keeps an eye on the speedometer, and when you get up to a certain point, he rings the bell. Ding dong, ding dong.
So did you learn that you're not supposed to trust the street signs in Italy?
Well, you know, I never really paid attention to street signs or red lights or anything like that in Italy. It's a madhouse. I had a situation where when I was leaving, the airplane left from Rome, so what I decided to do was, rather than spend the night in Naples and take a bus up to Rome, I thought, well, I'll catch a train to Rome and catch a bus from, you know, the hotel where I was staying to the airport. But I only had like a few minutes to get to the train station before the last train left Naples. And I flagged down a taxi guy, and, you know, and I had just a bunch of Italian money that I was looking to get rid of anyway since I was leaving the country. So I was like, look, if you can get me to the train station by a certain time, you know, whatever tip I got is yours, you know, apart from what I need to buy the ticket, right? And he's like, okay, and this guy broke rules I didn't even know existed. He went the wrong way down a tunnel.
Yeah.
And it was insane. And then he went down.
Italian, so.
Yeah. I don't know if the Germans are as crazy as the Italians are when it comes to driving, but I turned white as a sheet, man. My eyes almost popped out of their socket. Ah!
Yeah, that's Italy.
But he got me there in time.
One of the things I've noticed in Italy is that you cannot trust the signs that say how far you are from a city. You can't. We were going from Padova to a city about 45 minutes away. It's supposed to be 45 minutes away anyways. And on the way, we saw a sign that said it was 20 kilometers to the city we were going to. And 2 kilometers later, it said 15 kilometers to that city. So there's a slight discrepancy. It's like X-Files time warp type thing.
It's not like that in Germany, though, right?
No, not even close. My husband often says that the directional signs in Germany are monkey proof. Of course,
wow.
When he got lost, I said he was dumber than a monkey, but.
Well, you know, I was almost in Germany when I was in the Air Force. They had scheduled me to go up to Bitburg, but at the last minute they changed my orders. I wound up in Montana. Boy, you talk about a change of cultures. I never got up there. Listen, Alyssa, we're about to take our last break here, so I have to let you go. I really appreciate you calling in all the way from Germany. That was real cool that you did that.
You're welcome. No problem.
So, listen, we'll keep in touch, and you can call in next week or so if you want. And and all that, okay? But in the meantime, we got to take a break and make a couple of dollars for the station and then finish up with the show, okay?
All right. You have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that was Alyssa from Germany, and we've got 15 minutes left. Let's take our last break, and then we'll come back, and we'll just wrap things up. And as soon as I hear the music, I can get going on that. There we go. Okay, we'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
You can see that in Alberta, diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds, and we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit helpmakeadifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
A mí no me ocurrirá.
私には起きないわ。
It won't happen to me.
There are 1 billion teenagers in the world today. That's 1 in 6 people. What if they don't know how or can't protect themselves against AIDS or unintended pregnancy? Help ensure people have access to the tools they need to build a healthy future. Visit www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
It happened to me.
It was one against, I don't know, probably 10. By the time they were done, his neck was red.
Oh, I am afraid to go to high school.
It scares me.
I have a knife and you don't, ha 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 ha.
There was this kid that was like 17, or he came to a school with a gun.
We didn't know if it was fake or real.
Our children need our help to deal with tough issues, like violence. Please, talk with your kids.
For a free booklet, call 1-800-CHILD-44. Brought to you by the Kaiser Family Foundation, Children Now, and the Ad Council.
Planet Jack. He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grassoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now Rudolph Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told him that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fats, and flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns can be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more eco-wrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grassoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Cliff Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show for the last 5 or 10 minutes or so, however long it's going to take. Hey, tune in after this. Stay tuned for the Fourth Estate Radio with my good friends John Fox and Bruce Birch over there. And John is out in Australia down under. Good day, mate. Where's Bruce? He's not here, Bruce. Blimey, it's hot in here, Bruce. Hot enough to boil a monkey's bum. I love that Monty Python bit. And Bruce Birch is out in, I think he's in the southern United States, too. Not exactly in Georgia, but out here in North Carolina or someplace like that. So, and what the wonders of Internet radio that we can have two hosts that are on as far away as all that. It's been an okay show tonight. It's been an okay show. I did want to talk about the whole conservatism thing, because that is pretty important that we start to define these terms and to try to take back the message. And the Head On Radio Network is a big part of that, because we have to not just be able to say it, but we have to get it out on the air and out to people where they work and where they live. And all that. I mean, that's what the Right Thing Ring does very well. I mean, AM radio was dying. AM radio was on it. Was on its left because all the music had gone to FM. You know, they had all the music shows. So, you know, AM was going nowhere. In fact, for those of you who are old enough to remember the show WKRP in Cincinnati, WKRP in Cincinnati was actually based on a station here in Atlanta, AM 790. I forget the call letters right offhand. WQXI. That's it, WQXI. Because in the late 60s, early 70s, they were one of the last really big music AM radio stations here in Atlanta. And the producer, the main guy for the station, the owner, was known for doing really, really crazy things. In fact, if you remember the famous episode of WKRP with the turkey giveaway, where the owner decided he was going to show that he could still run things, you know, and not let the young people run stuff all the time, and he was going to have a big turkey giveaway, and what he wound up doing was throwing turkeys from a helicopter. And it's just a classic bit, you know, where the announcer's there and the news guy doesn't know what's going on. You know, he wasn't told. He was just told to go to a certain square. And he's like, oh, my God, they're turkeys. They're falling all over the place. One just hit the windshield of a parked car. They're hitting the ground like sacks of wet cement, you know. And it was a riot. And there was apparently he did something similar to that. I don't think he dropped them from a helicopter. But I think he was just trying to give live turkeys away. And in the show, the great line after the guy got back, he just came back and shook his head. He said, "As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly." But that TV show was based upon WQXI here in Atlanta, which is now 790 The Zone Sports Talk Radio, and you know, it's real. It's real interesting to see the change, but AM radio has basically gone the way of right-wing talk. That's the big bulk of it right there. And because of that, they were able to get into people's workplaces. They were able to get into people's homes. You know, and it made a very, very big difference, and they were able to spread their propaganda around. And we're trying to do something like that here in Head On Radio Network. We certainly want to get to where we can reach more people. And you know, we can use your help as far as just as far as being a good listening audience, but also if you wanna donate, you can give a donation and to the White Rose Society as well. That's whiterosesociety.org. And we have a lot of wonderful hosts here, and you know, not just myself, but you know, Bob Kincaid, Guy James, John Fox, Ben, Bruce Birch, a lot of good shows, a lot of good people. And like I said, following me, stay tuned. We'll be having Fourth Estate Radio coming up next. Agnes is cueing me that it's about to end it up, so I want to thank her for producing yet another wonderful show and doing such a wonderful job with so little recognition. And I'm really glad to be part of this, and I'm glad to have Agnes there helping out because she does such a fantastic job. And I want to thank her, and I want to thank Bob Kincaid, and I want to thank Ben Birch from the White Rose Society and everybody involved here at the Head On Radio Network. Like I said, Fourth Estate Radio is coming up next on the Head On Radio Network. And until that show comes along, and I'm still waiting for the music here. As soon as I hear the music, are we ready to break just yet? Do I have another minute or so, Agnes? How long do I got before you want me to cut out? Any idea at all? I'm just killing time. I know we've only got about a minute because you don't want me to go all the way till the You know, okay, I got 1 minute. I got 1 minute to call. Just, again, let me just sing the praises of the Head On Radio Network, because we do such a wonderful job, and the White Rose Society, which does a wonderful job in archiving. Oh, by the way, I got interviewed for a little spot on Air America Radio, a show about religion that they do every weekend that probably only a couple of dozen or so people listen to. Shh, I didn't say that. It was a very nice interview, actually, because I'm an agnostic. They wanted to get the viewpoint of an agnostic and what an agnostic believes. Because, quite frankly, agnostics and atheists are not treated very well here in this country. And I wanted to get that point out. You know, we're a very, very religious nation. So they interviewed me, and it's something that they do with just people like, you know, Man in the Street or voices from the Internet and whatnot. And hopefully that'll be not next week, but the week after. I don't know why it's taking so long. I think they just run in reruns for a little while, and they're going to mix it all and get it all together. I hope they don't make me sound bad. I think it went off rather well, but I've had experience with this sort of thing before, where you think it goes one way and you listen to it and it turns out they make you sound like it's something completely different. So I really hope that that's not what they do. Anyway, that's about